KALW.
Zolé, Zola, Zolé, Zola, 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 Zolé.
A local musician from Rwanda recalls his journey with music and his special love for drums.
Drumming is like fire. The more you do it, like there's like a fire burning in your body.
We'll meet Gatore Mukrahinda. Then filmmaker Benjamin Mulholland talks about his latest movie and diversity in the horror genre.
And I just decided that I was like, oh, we should just do Lake Mark Monster, but Goonies, but with people of color.
And San Francisco author Mary Ladd reads from her new book. Beats, movies, and literature. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. We'll start today with a conversation from our Diaspora Stories series, where we hear the stories of people who've made the Bay Area their home and are doing the thing they love. Today, we'll meet Gatore Mukrahinda. He's from Rwanda and lived all over Africa, in the Congo, the Ivory Coast, Tanzania, Kenya. He studied business and he's an entrepreneur. And he's a drummer. If you've come to one of our drum circles and salsa lessons here at our KALW space at 220 Montgomery, you would have met him because he's the teacher. One day last year, he was just walking by. He popped in curiously, and he's been a regular part of our KALW events ever since. I want to know when music came into your life.
So I grew up, my father used to, aside from owning a bakery, also own a bar. So we play loud music, and in front of our house there was also a bar. So you hear they call rumba, you know, rumba that tells stories. And I used to hear Franco. Franco is probably the king of rumba back in those days. And so the music was storytelling, right? They talk about like everyday story, right? But they put it in the music. And then when I traveled to Congo, I used to go watch, there was a traditional Congolese group that was playing just close to where I was staying at. And then I would just go watch them. And for some reason, I just love drumming. Even that was my pastime. I would just drum on anything.
When did that start?
It started very early. When I was like maybe 8 years old, I would just take anything.
Like what, like a pot?
Yeah, like a pot or like a water bottle. And then I would drum, and then we'd make like fake bands with friends. So we just like,
I'm just imagining like little Gatore with his friends and taking the pots and pans and the water bottles.
I started drumming in church on Sunday.
It stayed with you.
Yeah, it stayed.
Because, you know, yes, we are African and we love music and we love drumming, but it's one thing to love something and another thing to do it and to do it and to keep doing it and to perfect it and to teach it like you're doing here.
Yes, yes.
So that was that. That's a decision. Like, drums didn't let you go. Okay, so then comes the time when you come to the U.S. Where did you come? Did you come straight to California?
I went to stay with a friend. Yeah, he was from Guinea. His friend was from Senegal. So he got just like one bedroom. So his friend let the room say, okay, you guys can stay in my room. That was a blessing. I just got in the country. Somebody just told me, you can stay here for 2 weeks for free instead of me going to the hotel. So I stayed there for 2 weeks. And then I started looking.
And that's something as well that I love about our kind of immigrant experiences. We are there for each other.
Yeah.
You know, like there's so many stories about people who just came. They just came to New York City. They just came to Washington, D.C. They didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
But they found
you know, other Africans, for example, who are just like, you know, come sleep. I have a bed for you.
Exactly.
Just come sleep until you figure things out.
Yes.
That kind of brotherhood. Yes. I love that. So you moved to California. How did you decide to do music? Because you're an economist, you're a businessman, you were doing real estate. How did you come to do music here in San Francisco?
I just got here and I saw, I had a friend that used to do drumming here at Malonga Center.
Malonga Cascalor.
Yeah, Cascalor.
In Oakland.
I saw the drumming and I saw this guy. And I loved it. I tried the drumming. I said, I know how to drum. So I did the drumming. I saw, like, when I saw the Cascalor Malonga Center, I knew it was also a good business. But it was a very, California was very expensive. First, just to rent. And then you have to have a place to get the drums, to store the drums. And I was already in a different business. I was doing business in the mall, renting a kiosk there. So I was already like too much. But I wanted to do the drumming and dancing. We went for a trip to Oregon and then it was just too expensive to stay in California. And then I said, okay, this is a place I can move and move with also my family. So then we moved to Oregon, 2016. I started then the drumming. I was lucky. I saw a guy that owned a studio. I asked him if I can rent his studio. And he basically gave it to me for free.
And what was the goal? Was it lessons?
I started doing lessons and drum circles. Because my group grew larger. I would do schools. I have a lady that owns two schools over there. And there was a need for drumming for special eds. And she hired me also to do drumming for special eds kids.
Mm.
I think autistic kids and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would do drumming. And then her husband owned like a retirement place for like old people. So I was busy every day doing drumming. So I always have my mini drum. The mini drum is right here.
What is it called?
This is called djembe. This is a West African. This is especially, this one is like Senegal. You see that this, and it even have a Senegalese map. Yeah, this kind of drum, you find them a lot in Senegal. Senegal, Guinea. It's a West African.
Can you play for us?
Yeah, sure.
What about drumming is healing or beneficial to these groups of people? What does it feel like to you?
Basically, it puts you in the moment. It's like meditation, right? But it's also, drumming is like fire. You know, the more you do it, like there's like a fire burning in your body. And to me, I use it also as a form of meditation, you know, and a rhythm. It's just like a flow. It makes you, your body want to move and be in the moment, the beat, right? So, and then when I discovered that, I started doing more of that. And then I see the people wanting it. I was invited almost every day to somebody's house to do drum circle. And there was a lady that had this disease where you lose your muscle. So actually she was start feeling really good, and she talked to her doctor about it, and then even her doctor recommended, did some research. And so she was very like, anytime I have a drum circle, she would come.
What did it feel like to be so helpful to people? Like they're coming because you make them, something that you do, something that you're teaching is making them feel good. like physically feel good and emotionally feel good? What does that feel like to you?
The giving, right? It's just a giving. The more they give you, you the feeling of if you do something good, you feel good, right? It's just like the same thing receiving, right? If somebody give you something and you receive it, you feel good. And you give it, you get it back. So if you see somebody happy, it's like watching babies. If you see a baby, if you smile to a baby, the baby smile back at you, right? So, and it's contagious. So, and then you, when you like see people being happy and yourself also, you become happy. It's also community. And I saw that in America, it was more like a lot of people independent. What I grew up in Rwanda in Africa is community, right? You can just go to somebody's house without invitation. You just show up. You go on the street. So you know everybody from this corner to corner. That's how I was able to survive. Because you just go, you make, even you don't, I would go to Ivory Coast. I didn't know anybody, but I was able to live there. Yeah,
communal societies.
Yeah, communal societies. It's community. And here. Yes. And then I didn't see that a lot here.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was just busy minding, you know, work. You go home, you come to your house.
So that's a big change for you. That's a big culture shock.
Yeah, it was a culture shock. And that's when also I just took the initiative to start the community circles. And, you know, instead of having isolation.
Yeah.
Because everybody's in their own world and, you know.
So that's in Oregon. So how did you get back to San Francisco?
My son was not happy there. It was not diverse. And then in 2020, you guys, everybody knows, coronavirus came. So I closed my business in the mall and I got into food business, catering business. That's in 2020.
When something's finished, you start the next one right away. And drumming is the thing.
Drumming stayed with me.
So, Gatore, can you play us out with a little tune on the drum before you leave us?
Okay. And one song I really always now I'm playing this to the drumming and open mic. I wrote this song back in Oregon, but the lyrics are in the Congo language, and it's called Zola. Zola means love, basically. And the song is just like these two words, Zole, Zola, Zole, Zola. So it's basically asking for love, love one another. And Luzolo Tulombele, we're asking for love. Papa Zola Moana, father love your son, mother love your daughter, your children, husband love your wife. It's just love one another.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me here. Zole, Zola, Zole, Zola, 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 Zole, Zola, Zole.
That's drummer and entrepreneur Gatore Mukrahinda. He hosts open mic nights here at KLW's event space at 220 Montgomery in San Francisco. The next one is June 28th. Come through.
Papa Zola Mana, Mana Zola Papa, Keto Zola Mobali, Mobali Zola Keto, Zola Zola Zola. Zole, Zola, Zole, Zola, 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 Zole, Zola, Zola.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Is there something scary lurking at the bottom of Oakland's Lake Merritt, like a monster? According to Oakland lore,
Back in the 1840s, a half-dragon, half-fish creature with sharp teeth killed several members of the Ohlone tribe. The Oakland Tribune reported unverified sightings of the monster in the 1940s. Oakland filmmaker Benjamin Mulholland put his own spin to the city's legend in his short, The Lake Merritt Monster. It's about a teenager who witnesses his mom being abducted by the scary creature on the night of his birthday. He and his high school friends try to get her back. The film has been recognized and screened at film festivals around the Bay Area. Benjamin Mulholland spoke with KLW's Janae Darden. Ben Mulholland, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Where did the idea of your film, Lake Merritt Monster, come from?
I was watching Goonies, and I was like, where is the people of color version of this? Like, it was probably like in 2013 or 16 or somewhere around there. Obviously, I was living in Oakland, and I knew about the Lake Merritt Monster legend, which has been around forever. And I just decided that I was like, oh, we should just do Lake Merritt Monster, but Goonies, but with people of color. And so that was like the idea that I came up with. And then I wasn't going to do it. I was going to make this other movie. And like, I would pitch this other movie to people and they'd be like, man, it's okay. And then I'd be like, well, I got this other one. What about this? And they would light up and be like, that's the movie. Make that one. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay. I started writing it one day and then, I pitched it to SF Film for a residency and I got in. And so that's where I really wrote the bulk of the drafts.
It was cool to see a monster in Oakland at Lake Merritt. I mean, what was that like to see your monster?
You know, it was amazing. It was amazing. It was to take something that you developed and you had in your mind and get it onto the screen. And I mean, I'm also the kind of director that all I see are the flaws, but that's just me. And most directors, we always see is what we wanted to do or what we should have done. But like, the monster is great looking. Like, it really is what I wanted. And it represents a lot of work by a lot of artists and myself too, like trying to dial it in. We spent a lot of time like refining what it looked like and how it moved and how it ate people. And you know, it was just, that part is cool when you see what's in your mind and it's on the screen and people see it and they don't hate it. I mean, everyone went into the movie thinking it was going to be kind of like Jason and the Argonauts, like stop motion or you know, whatever it was going to, yeah, have a terrible costume. And then they see the monster and they go, and their whole attitude changes. It all flips and they're like, oh my god, this is a real movie. And they become engaged. And so it was, watching the audience watch it is the best part. Like them going along and laughing when they're supposed to laugh and being scared when they're supposed to be scared and being really feeling like they're at the movies. I think that part was the best part for me.
The lead character, Ali, mm-hmm. is looking for his mother. He's a teenager, mm-hmm. lives in Oakland, into punk rock. His dad is a cop. He has friends of different races. Tell us about this character, Ali, and you know, are you similar to him? Are there things in him that you see in yourself?
The secret about all writers is that any character we write is a piece of us. Like, I think that's really what writers are, is we take small different pieces of ourselves and put it into all of our characters. Like, each character represents a piece of my life in various different ways. Yeah, I was a skateboarder. I listened to heavy metal and punk rock and all that when I was a kid. I still do. My dad is a cop. So,
okay.
All that, you know, it's not entirely real. Like, my dad doesn't, in the movie that dad drinks, like, my dad doesn't drink. So it's like, it's not real. It's not like reality, but it is, you know, a different form of reality, a different form of us. And so I took my childhood of skateboarding and snowboarding and like, I listened to everything. I listened to rap, I listened to punk, I listened to like, a lot of heavy metal. Like, it was just in rock and roll when I was younger. And it was just, I took that and I was like, okay, here's this cool character.
It's nice to see a Black kid into rock, because mm-hmm. we don't see that image of Black kids, you know, into rock music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's always this joke within the Black community about horror movies that I think we're not making as much anymore about, you know, the Black person always the first one to die
yeah.
in a horror movie. And now, because we're seeing
more horror being made, you know, with Black artists. Mm-hmm. We living.
Yeah.
Movies. You know, it's nice to see Black people that's not just being ravaged by monsters and horror characters.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's, there's a distinct reason why that was happening. You know, those characters were expendable. In my short, I just was going to make I made a thing of not killing any kids or any other characters. Sorry, spoiler. But it was like, I don't feel like people dying gives you drama.
Interesting, really?
Yeah, I mean, like, think about back in the 80s, like, they had the cartoons, right? G.I. Joe would come on, and G.I. Joe, they'd fight, and they'd beat up Cobra Commander, and Cobra Commander would go, I'll come back to you next week, Joes! And then he would come back next week. Like, no one died in those shows. You just kind of kick somebody's butt, and they'd go off with their butt whooping, and then they'd come back and try again. Because mm-hmm. that was, like, how villains, and it's like, you know, when I watch superhero movies now, and I watch, you know, all that stuff, everyone's dying. I'm like, why are you killing everybody? Why are their lives so cheap that it's okay? Just kill them, you know. That's drama. Like, you know, it's kind of the Game of Thrones effect. Like, everyone was like, oh, if we just kill them, it equals drama. And I don't really feel like that is what drama is. Drama is the struggle of the journey, right? Mm-hmm. Of the character's journey and what do they go through. And I'm not saying death is not a part of the life experience. It obviously is. But to me, it better be worth it. Like, I bet if I'm going to put a death in there, I better get a huge amount of mileage out of it, because it's just an easy way to create drama.
There are social monsters that we deal with every day mentioned in this film. And I'm thinking of that scene where that homeless man was warning people about the monster. Mm-hmm. And there's a crowd gathered. And he's also talking about gentrification and racism in Oakland. And mm-hmm. then you see this white woman threatening to call the cops. Mm-hmm. Barbecue Becky. That's not what she's called, but, you know, I know that was an Easter egg, right?
Monster Monica, yeah.
Monster Monica, right? Monster Monica. Can you talk about that? You know, that's one thing I do like about horror, is because you always wonder who's the real monster.
Yeah, that was a really hard needle to thread, right? Because I didn't want to be super heavy-handed and be like, this is bad, and this is, you know, I wanted it to be kind of a, you know, hopefully it came across as a metaphor, and one that you, like, just how you're extrapolating it, that's what I wanted.
I understand that you are working on a longer feature mm-hmm. of this film. Where are you at in that process?
The script's been done for a while. This short came out of I got sent to Hollywood to do some pitches for some companies. And all the companies were like, well, if you make a short, call us back. We love the project. We love the pitch deck, but we, you know, can you make a short? And so I went out and made a short. It was more of a proof of concept than a short, but I did it. And the terrible thing was that by the time I got it done, everyone who I had talked to no longer worked at said companies. So it's just kind of like, but I mean, it's still in Hollywood. There's been a couple companies that have expressed serious interest, but you never know.
That was filmmaker Benjamin Mulholland speaking with KELW's Janae Darden. That interview was co-produced by Porfirio Rangel. You can watch the film The Lake Merritt Monster. We've got a link to it at KELW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, an episode from our pocket-sized book tour, New Arrivals. San Franciscan Mary Ladd released her book about long COVID in the fall of 2023. Here she is.
Here's a key passage. It's the introduction from the front of the book. Getting the word out about the long COVID experience is an urgent mission. Too many of us remain sick. We can't afford to wait. Long COVID leaves us exhausted, stressed, lonely, and grieving the fuller lives we once led. Many of us are debilitated, newly disabled, or unable to participate in society anymore. It's heavy lifting to carry constantly recurring worries about new and old symptoms, waning relationships, and finding money to cover medical bills and basics, including housing and food. Fatigue, cognitive impairment, dizziness, heart palpitations, and hundreds of other symptoms and conditions bring up scary questions.
That was San Francisco author Mary Ladd reading from her book, The Long COVID Reader. New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse. You can hear more Bay Area authors reading from their books at klw.org/newarrivals. And before we leave you, here's some music from a local artist. This is Matt Robideau. He's performing tomorrow night at El Rio in San Francisco. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sondra Halliday, Alistair Boone, James Rowlands, Molly Blair Salyer, Mary Catherine O'Connor, Shirin Adil, Marissa Ortega Welch, Angela Johnston, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.